Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 26 event, which takes place in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost 0.98 units after going 1-1 on our premium bets for UFC Fight Night 123. We also lost our 1-unit free bet for Glory 49. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 26 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and Big Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a welterweight contest between Nordine Taleb, who is 13-4, and Danny Roberts, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Taleb, minus 155, the comeback on Roberts at plus 115. Looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, 5dimes.eu, currently it's Taleb minus 150, the comeback on Roberts at plus 130. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There is two-way action coming into this fight. Not surprised. I mean, this is kind of a tricky fight to pick, although I do lean a little bit more towards Taleb. I mean, both these guys are talented for sure. They both have finishing ability, and they both have a little bit of hype. I mean, they both earn a lot of respect at the betting windows, typically speaking, depending on who they're matched up with. So being matched up against each other, I mean, Roberts especially is a guy that I think a lot of people, you know, want to pull their wallet out and lay down some cash on. I mean, he's was known as a finisher before he came into the UFC. There was a lot of hype behind him, and he's performed relatively well. I think he's underachieved thus far, but you could tell he is getting a little bit better. I mean, he suffered that loss to Perry, and I think that he bounced back nice against Nash. Of course, he needed a win like that. He needed a finish to, I think, get back on track and get his confidence going again a little bit more. But overall, I mean, I think Roberts is dangerous, like I said, especially on the feet. On the ground, if you put him on his back, he's shown he's capable of finishing fights there as well. So I think out of the finishes, back and forth here, I think Roberts has the edge in actually winning inside the distance. But Taleb, I think, is still the more complete fighter, and I think he's a little bit ahead of Roberts right now overall. I think on the feet, it's going to be pretty close. I do like Taleb's boxing a little bit better. And I think on the ground, I think Taleb's wrestling is better, and he could probably avoid Roberts' submission attempts on the ground as well. So I think he gets top position, and he's able to control the fight more often than not here in this matchup against Roberts as well. So I think it is going to be a competitive fight. I think it'll go back and forth a little bit, but I do think that Taleb will be dictating – controlling the pace of this fight, and he'll probably mix in some takedowns along the way. And it doesn't hurt the fact that this fight is in Canada, and obviously, you know, Taleb training with TriStar and living there. He's gonna, I think, not have, I guess, negativity going against him, at least put it that way, and the crowd's gonna be on his side, so it can't hurt his chances here on the scorecards if it does go. So with all that being said, I think it should be a really good fight, but I'm leaning a little bit more towards Taleb to get the job done.
I like Taleb as well. These guys are about the same size, but I just think Taleb is a little bit more physical, and he mixes things up a lot better. Obviously, Danny Roberts is a power threat. He has heavy hands, and he can knock people out, but he's also a bit chinny, and I think that he can be exposed on the ground as well. Roberts doesn't have the greatest conditioning, as evidenced by, you know, getting in a couple of real sloppy fights against, you know, Dominique Steele and then the Mike Perry loss where, you know, he was just fading and then just ate a big shot at the end and just went down. And the other thing you have to factor in is even though Roberts does have a submission victory in the UFC, I mean, he has zero takedown accuracy, I mean, he doesn't really look to get the fights to the floor. He's more reactive on the ground. And I think Nordine Taleb, with, you know, the elite training that he's getting, he should be well prepared for anything that Danny Roberts is going to throw at him. I would honestly be floored if Roberts caught Taleb with an armbar from guard or a triangle choke or something. On the feet, this is a more competitive fight. I think Taleb mixes it up better with some, you know, thudding body kicks. He has a bit of underrated power. I think that he's starting to step into his strikes a little bit more. Obviously he had that awesome knockout against Eric Silva, but, overall, I would say that, Roberts, in terms of pure one punch power, clearly is the more dangerous threat, but, with Roberts not having the greatest chin, not having the greatest conditioning, and being a little too comfortable off of his back, if he gets taken down, I think this is a very winnable fight for Taleb. He clearly has to avoid wading through big power strikes or eating something heavy on the way if he's looking for takedowns. But if Taleb can mix things up, I think he'll be competitive with Roberts on the feet, and then if he gets Roberts thinking about the takedown, that might allow him to win a stand-up fight. And if he is able to get takedowns, I think that'll just allow him to win at least a decision. So I like Nordin Taleb as well. Now, the other Fight Pass bout is a welterweight contest between Jordan Meehan, who is 29-12, and Eric Silva, who is 19-8 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hopping Meehan -160 to come back on Silva at +120. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Meehan -135 to come back on Silva at +115. So line margins have tightened up and a little bit more dog action coming out. Silva, nothing too crazy though, because there is two-way action on this fight as well. Not surprised by that either, because man, this is a tough fight to call. I mean, to be honest with you, how could you trust either guy at this point? Talk about underachievers. I mean, both these guys are so talented. I mean, I thought we would see one or even both of these guys eventually get a UFC title shot. That's how much potential and how much talent these guys have. Finishing ability off the charts. I mean, offensive skill set, period, off the charts. I mean, everything across the board. These guys can strike. These guys can submit you. These guys have wrestling to go along with it, everything. But the problem is gas tanks and chins. I mean, these guys have shown that, you know, they can dish it out, but at times they can't take it. And their conditioning is to be, you know, I mean, disappointing at times as well. So they have a lot of holes in their games, and it's starting to show because these guys are suffering losses that they shouldn't really be suffering. I mean, with their skill sets, like I said. So I don't know. I'm having a hard time to back either guy here. Even if for a pick, it's that difficult for me, because I think that Meehan overall probably is the more dangerous and more technical striker on the feet. I think he can do a little bit more damage. I do trust his chin a little bit more as well. Not all that much, but I still do slightly here in this matchup against Silva. I think Silva is the better ground fighter though overall. He's the more dangerous submission artist obviously as well. And his defense is better on the ground in that regard. So I think he does have an edge if he goes to the ground, and even on the feet. I mean, Silva does have some knockout power. You cannot take this guy lightly. So it's really who I think gasses a little bit more. I mean, is going to probably lose the fight because they're going to get caught by that first strike, or that's, you know, like I said, submission. I don't think Meehan submits Silva, but, you know, it could be the other way around. If Silva does get Meehan in some trouble and it's a kind of a grueling fight, and we might see Meehan give into a submission here as well. So I don't know. I mean, this is, like I said, I've been bouncing back and forth on this fight as well. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Meehan. It is, again, in Canada. I don't think it's going to hit the scorecards, but it won't hurt if it does, again, because he is the hometown guy, and he's obviously a very popular fighter in Canada as well. But I just think more so than anything, Meehan has shown at least that he can go three rounds, even if it's a lackluster performance, I guess more consistently than Silva has. So I trust Meehan's gas tank just a little bit more, and I think he is going to be the more dangerous fighter on the feet, which it probably stays upright for the most part as well. So with all that being said, not confident, but I got to lean me in a little bit.
This is a battle of two of the least consistent fighters in the UFC. I mean, it is so tough to rely on either of these guys, Jordan Meehan or Eric Silva, to pick up a win when you think that they should get a win. I mean, they have so much talent. I mean, Jordan Meehan was one of the more devastating and exciting strikers to come out of Canada. I mean, everybody was, giving this guy, putting this guy on a huge hype train. And then, you know, all of a sudden people realized that if he couldn't put people away quickly, he slowed down horribly. And then he also had some issues fighting off of his back, and he started to get exposed. He retired, and then he came back, and in his next two fights in the UFC, he's lost decisions where he hasn't really looked like himself. I mean, he hasn't really looked dangerous at all, even in the first round of those fights. So it's really tough to think that this is the fight where Jordan Meehan turns it around. But if anything, you know, if he lands a big shot, Eric Silva can definitely be knocked out. I mean, Silva's been knocked out several times inside the octagon. I mean, this is a guy that had a big hype train as well, training with Anderson Silva and Lyoto Machida and all those guys. He entered the UFC and was just destroying people, but, you know, he would make mistakes and he would lose decisions, and then he started getting knocked out, and then, you know, he had that awful moment against Nordin Taleb where he, you know, faked, you know, like a fist bump and tried to punch him in the face, and then Taleb ended up knocking him out. I mean, it just made him look like an idiot. But I would say since the Taleb loss, Eric Silva has looked a lot better. I mean, he looked awesome against Lewin Chagas. I mean, his striking was better. His ground game was better. And Chagas is a guy that actually is pretty talented on the ground. And his conditioning was huge in that fight. I mean, he ended up getting a third round stoppage. That's crazy for me to think Eric Silva getting a third round stoppage on anybody. And I thought he was looking pretty good against Yancy Medeiros until he got caught and knocked out. So, the one thing that I think is going good here in this fight for Eric Silva is the fact that Silva is a strong starter. And while Meehan is a strong starter too, I don't know if I see Meehan getting a late stoppage against Silva. I see Meehan slowing down more than Silva. And I think Silva does have an edge if this fight goes to the floor, and he can get takedowns. I mean, he's not a huge wrestler, but, he has picked up takedowns, in fights. And I think that if he really wants to, he can get this fight to the floor, and that would be a huge advantage for him. So, Silva does have a pretty good ground game. So there's a possibility that he goes there. So I think, Silva has the edge in conditioning, in, ability at this moment in terms of well-roundedness and on the ground and on the feet. Meehan probably is definitely the more technical boxer, and Meehan has the better chin. But, as long as Silva can avoid that knockout shot, I think that he wins. So my pick is going to be Eric Silva. Now kicking things off on the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have Alessio De Chirico, who is 10-1, taking on Alawel Bengbose, who is 6-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in De Chirico, minus 135. The comeback on Bengbose at minus 105. Right now, looking over five times, De Chirico is minus 120. The comeback on Bengbose is at even money. So line margins have tightened up. This line actually flipped early on. Bengbose was a slight favorite when the early action came in, and now we're seeing De Chirico the favorite again as we're getting a little bit closer to fight time. So there is two action in this fight as well. Another difficult one. I mean, De Chirico, talk about underperforming so far in the UFC. This guy's another one that, you know, internationally had a little bit of buzz, had a little bit of hype around him. I mean, he's a quality fighter that also has a complete skill set overall. Decent striking, decent fight IQ, decent wrestling, decent ground game. So, I mean, you really can't ask for more, right? He just has to kind of get tested and kind of climb that ladder a little bit. But unfortunately for him, you know, he got caught in Spice Lee's trap there on the ground. I mean, he got submitted. Eric Spicy is one of those guys that you tangle with him on the ground too much. It doesn't surprise you who he submits. It's that kind of offensive submission game. So, but I was a little bit surprised because I was expecting better from De Chirico. I was expecting better IQ, and unfortunately he got caught up in that trap. And then of course he lost to Velekovic, which I have Velekovic in high regards. I think he's a very solid, underrated fighter, obviously. I mean, if you guys have been following the podcast, you know that, but that was up a weight class. So, I mean, Velekovic is better suited at 170 pounds. And of course, this is a middleweight. So his only quality win is against McClellan. And that was even a competitive fight. So De Chirico has underperformed thus far. And Bengbose is another guy that I wouldn't say he's underperformed because honestly, I think he's opened up some eyes. I mean, he came in right away in his UFC debut and knocked out Safarian. And after that, a lot of people, I mean, we had him a favorite over Ferreira after that fight, because we thought, man, this guy's legit, because his striking alone is definitely something to keep an eye out for, because the guy is a little bit unorthodox because of the variety and the angles that the guy throws with his technique. But man, he has great kicking ability. He's got tremendous power with those kicks. He's got good speed. He's got decent accuracy. And again, he comes in with awkward angles with his punches as well. So the guy definitely has some KO power in the feet. And if he's able to keep it upright, and his takedown defense is actually solid and it's actually improving, but that still is a flaw. So if he gets in there with a solid wrestler and it goes past the first round, he's in some trouble, because, you know, these guys are going to be getting takedowns on him, and they're going to, you know, be utilizing against his weakness, which is obviously the ground as well. They're going to take advantage of that. So Dicherico is another one of these guys. I think that if he weathers the early storm here against Mambosi, I think he's going to probably take over round two, round three, and either get a finish or he'll cruise to a, I don't want to say comfortable decision, but, you know, he'll get, should get a 29-28 type of decision here if it goes that far. Again, I have difficulty believing that it will go that far, because I think these guys are dangerous, especially Mambosi. He could finish the fight early on in this, you know, in this contest. Or if he starts gassing, I think there is a good chance Dicherico, like I said, finishes off him off as well. So another competitive fight, another fight that, you know, I could see either guy finishing, but I'm going to have to go with the more complete fighter here in Dicherico. I think that he can survive that early storm, and I think he's just better suited to win his fight overall if he does. So, I mean, it's hard not to pick against the better fighter here. So I'm going to go his way. Dicherico's the pick.
This is a tough one to call for me, because Dicherico has looked pretty awful so far in his UFC run, and Mambosi, I mean, at least he is what we think he is. Dicherico so far has had three fights. The first one he lost his debut to Velikovic when Velikovic was fighting at middleweight as a welterweight. Then he barely squeaked by a split decision against Gareth McClellan, one of the probably worst fighters in the UFC middleweight division. And then he quickly got submitted by Eric Spicely. So, I mean, three fights, three poor performances, the one win against one of the worst fighters. Mambosi, on the other hand, I mean, this is a guy that is looking to knock your head off. I mean, I would say in the first 2 or 3 minutes of any fight, he's one of the more dangerous guys in the division. He's light on his feet. He's explosive, dynamic, very powerful. After that, it's a big problem. I mean, Mambosi does not have a ground game. He doesn't have conditioning. I mean, he looks like he's fighting in quicksand after 3 minutes. I mean, even in the first round, he slows down drastically. He's not bouncing around. I mean, he just gets flat-footed. So basically, what if you pick Mambosi in this fight, you're picking that he's going to knock Dicherico out in the first round. And honestly, it's possible. Dicherico is not that great of a striker. I haven't been that impressed with him. And I think Mambosi could connect on him. Clearly, Mambosi is flawed. We all know this. But in a couple of his performances, I mean, he's really cracked some people. I mean, I thought, you know, the Daniel Serafian fight, you know, that's a guy that people were hyping up on Tough Brazil, and Mambosi just slaughtered him. And he had Cesar Ferreira in big trouble multiple times and somehow survived on the ground against Ferreira. I think more Ferreira was just trying to keep that fight, his head close to Mambosi's chest just to avoid any damage. And then obviously the Paulo Costa fight, Mambosi, you know, he started strong in that fight and then Costa just was too much for him and, just turned the tide a second that Mambosi started to slow down. So this time around, does Mambosi have a chance to take out, his opponent? And I think he does. I'm not a big believer in Dicherico. I don't think he's that good. His striking has looked unimpressive, like being competitive on the feet with guys that are not good strikers, so far. And I think if there's any chance for Mambosi to win, it's going to be by knockout. And I think that he could do it. So, I'm going to side with Mambosi here. I think that in the first couple minutes of this fight, he's going to be really dangerous. And if Dicherico's not careful, he's going to eat something heavy and he's going to go down. So my pick's going to be Mambosi. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have John McDessie, who's 14-6, taking on Abel Trujillo, who is 15-6 with one no contest. Now, Nick, What's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I opened Trujillo minus 165 to come back on MacDessy at plus 125. And right now over 5 times is Trujillo minus 190 to come back on MacDessy plus 165. So line margins have tightened up and there is more actually coming to Trujillo's way. This was a difficult line to set as well. I mean, obviously MacDessy's been out for a while. I mean, he's been out since that, I mean, devastating KO loss to Vanetta. And we have to see where he is right now, honestly, in his career, because, I mean, mentally, we're not sure that could have a devastating effect, especially if you're a striker and you get caught by something like that as well. And that was obviously the second knockout loss that he had devastating like that. Cerrone was the other one as of late. And then he's had some time off in between. So, I mean, that's the thing with MacDessy. I think he's a very, very, very good fighter. I think especially in his striking aspect of his game, obviously that's where he excels at. He is one of the better strikers, the cleaner strikers, the more skilled strikers in the lightweight weight class. Unfortunately for him, he's a little small. I mean, he's definitely on the shorter end of things at times, but that hasn't really hindered him all that much because he's used to fighting taller opponents. But if he's fighting guys that have also some skill on the feet that are tall, I mean, that's sometimes I think that presents him a little bit of problems. Trujillo is going to be more his size. So I think the striking matchup here should be a little bit more, catering towards what he wants to see here and that type of situation there. But also MacDessy, obviously he has a little bit of weakness when it comes to his ground game, but his takedown defense in most cases is good enough to keep the fight upright and then he could strike with his opponents. Now here against Trujillo, if he's able to do that, I mean, he's going to probably have a little bit of success, but he also has to watch out for Trujillo's punching power. Trujillo is a very powerful guy. We all know that. I mean, he's just, I mean, a beast when he comes at you. He's got tremendous knockout power, knockout ability in every limb. I mean, he can hit you with either hand and knock you out. Kick will knock you out. I mean, he's just a beast, man. He can slam you. Ground and pound is vicious as well. He's got decent wrestling. And he's starting to show off a little bit of a sub game offensively that really opening my eyes a little bit as we go here. I mean, it's been pretty – I wasn't expecting basically Trujillo to pull off some of the things he has of late. I mean, going back to the Sims fight that wasn't that long ago, Tony Sims, I mean, that submission was slick, and I wasn't expecting that, you know, to come out of Trujillo like that. So he's developing his skill set. He's faced really good competition, and his cardio at times – is questionable for sure. That's one thing that bothers me about Trujillo, and he can't get in these firefights, and his chin obviously could be tagged and he's been knocked out before. So you got to kind of be cautious, approach that with cautious as well. But I don't know. I think this is going to be a really good fight. I think MacDessy is the more technical striker. He can have success here, but I guess I'm picking against MacDessy in this fight only because he's been a little bit, a little bit more inconsistent with his performances and his time off and or whatnot as well. So I think Trujillo's in a better spot right now than MacDessy is, but it's another one. I mean, there's quite a few of these on this card that I'm not ultra confident in. And a lot of people that are just laying the price on Trujillo, I'd be careful. I would not lay over 2-1 on MacDessy because he's such a good striker. And this matchup is a decent one for him as well, because he's going to have some success, I think, in his fight as well. So tough one. But I'm going to lean a little bit more Trujillo. I just trust him more, a little bit more at this stage in his career as well. So the pick is Trujillo, but again, be cautious if you're betting this fight.
John MacDessy is a talented fighter. I mean, I've been a big fan of his ever since I watched his spinning back fist knockout at the UFC Toronto show. So for me to think that Abel Trujillo has a good chance to beat him, it says a lot. And it also says a lot about where I think MacDessy is at this point in his career. I mean, I think the highlight of his career was getting an opportunity to step in and fight Donald Cerrone. And, you know, he had a close fight against the Cowboy. But I mean, he just took a lot of punishment and eventually his jaw broke and he just couldn't hang with him. Since then, I don't think he's looked that great. I mean, clearly the Vanetta knockout was a wild, crazy thing of spinning kick. But I mean, it was surprising because that's kind of what MacDessy's known for is, coming from that Taekwondo background, all the crazy spinning attacks and, a wide variety of kicks. I mean, that's kind of where he made his name, but, he hasn't been as effective with those and he hasn't, been as willing to engage with those type of strikes. He's been more of a competent kickboxer in, recent fights. Against Trujillo, I think MacDessy really has to stick with his techniques. I mean, Trujillo clearly is not as technical of a striker as MacDessy, but I mean, he makes up for that with aggression and power. And I mean, this is a guy that, had a fight of the year candidate against Jamie Varner, a guy that knocked down Tony Ferguson when he fought him, before eventually, you know, fading and getting submitted. So we gotta give him a little bit of respect. Trujillo clearly could just steamroll McDessie if he just charges forward through his guard, catches him kind of off guard and takes him out. That being said, if McDessie is able to utilize distance well, I mean, he could make Trujillo look silly on the feet. But one thing McDessie does that could be frustrating is he fights off of his back foot so much that it looks like he's just retreating constantly, even though, you know, you look at some of the fights where he lost decisions and he landed 30 more strikes than his opponents over the course of three rounds. He still ends up losing. It's because he likes to circle on the outside. He likes to back away and get on his bicycle at times. And judges aren't huge fans of that. So if Trujillo is the aggressor and moving forward, even if McDessie is outstriking him, I could see McDessie lose a decision. And then the other thing clearly is if Trujillo can get this fight to the floor. McDessie is not a takedown threat. Basically, all he cares about is keeping fights upright so he can go back to striking. And if Trujillo can get him on the ground, I think that he clearly could get something going. I mean, his fight against Tony Sims, he looked really good on the canvas, clearly improved with not just his takedowns, but his submission game. So if Trujillo can get all facets of his game going and be aggressive, look for takedowns, and if he can actually put McDessie on his back and keep him there, I think there's a good chance that he does win this fight. But, and the other thing you have to factor in is that McDessie hasn't fought in a year. He is getting older. He started to take damage. Maybe Trujillo can just take him out. You know, most people haven't been able to do that, but, Trujillo does have a lot of power. So I'm going to side with Trujillo. I'm not crazy confident about this because I think McDessie could make him look silly on the feet, but, I'm a believer in Trujillo, and I think he's been a little bit more active, and that aggression could pay off. Now dropping all the way down to the flyweight division, we have Tim Elliott, who is 15-8-1, taking on UFC newcomer Pietro Menga, who is 13-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Elliott minus 275, the comeback on Menga, at plus 195. Now at five dimes, it's currently Elliott minus 260, the comeback on Menga, is plus 220, and I am surprised. I'm surprised it didn't get crazy here with this fight. Wasn't sure how people were going to approach this fight, so it looks like most people are taking their time and kind of using caution with it, and I agree with it. I mean, it's a tough situation because you have Elliott, which is one of the better flyweights in the UFC, and we've known that for a while. I mean, he even won the Ultimate Fighter show recently as well, you know, his second chance and got that title shot against DJ, and he actually performed really, really well. He gained a lot of people's respect, in that performance against the man, Demetrius Johnson himself. So Elliott is definitely top of the food chain when it comes to the flyweights. All, I mean, anywhere in the world, he is that good. He's elite, and stepping in on short notice and facing a guy like that, that I was talking about with Elliott, even if he's coming off of a surprising quick submission loss to win, with Elliott, you know, he's coming off of, you know, a loss that you wouldn't expect or whatever. So, you know, he's going to be hungry for a win. This is a tough fight. This is a very tough fight, but Menga's game. I mean, I was actually really impressed with what I saw, in looking up Menga and kind of just getting a good feel for what he's made of. And he's a legit prospect. I mean, talk about a well-rounded skill set. This guy is dangerous on the feet. He's got clean technical striking ability. He's got KO power to go along with it. I mean, there's not much to not like about the guy. I mean, he's dangerous on the ground. I mean, he scrambles really well, as I mean, everything about him, but there is a weakness to his game. He can be put on his back and he can be controlled. And the other thing that I did find is a couple fights that I saw. I mean, the guy looked like he could be a title contender right away, immediately in the UFC. And then other fights that I saw of him, he looked a little bit different. He looked, I don't know, he looked like he lacked a little bit of energy or he was just off that day, but it was a couple fights that I've seen like that. So I think that he, based on the footage, we've seen a little bit of inconsistent performances from him. So I'm wondering who's going to show up here against Elliott, honestly, in this fight, because if we see the good version of Menga that I saw and the guy that brings it in, and the guy has that, I mean, the supercharged energy that is just really aggressive and goes for the kill, he's going to give Elliott all he can handle. But if it's the Menga that kind of lays back a little bit more and just kind of settles for being put on his back and control a little bit, then obviously he's going to lose. So This is another difficult one. I mean, even with Menga making his debut against a savvy vet like Elliott, like I'm saying. So I think what's going to happen here is Elliott's going to do enough to get the decision win over Menga. I don't think he's going to finish him despite it being short notice. I think Menga's going to come in here. I think he might gas as the fight goes, but I think he's good enough to avoid getting finished by Elliott. So I think Elliott's going to squeak by and probably earn a competitive but decent decision win over Menga, and then Menga is going to get another shot here at 125, and he's going to open up some eyes because I think the guy will win his share of fights in the UFC, especially the flyweight division, and he'll go on a little run. So I hope we see the improvement in Menga's game, because I'm telling you, this guy is definitely somebody to keep an eye out, and I think he can really, if he keeps on developing like I think, he can make a run possibly and put himself in title contention or possibly get a rematch one day down the road with a guy like Elliott and get a W over him. So we'll see where Menga goes in his career. But right now for this fight, it's hard not to pick Elliott. So I'm going to go that way.
Yeah, this is one of those trap fights potentially. You know, Tim Elliott was supposed to take on Justin Scoggins in a fight that he was probably really amped up for. And then all of a sudden Scoggins drops out in the last minute. And this new guy gets brought in who's never fought in the UFC, but is a pretty legit prospect. If Elliott takes him lightly, he could definitely lose this fight. You know, Petro Manga is a guy with a solid striking background. I mean, he has kickboxing training, and he has a very good ground game. So this is a guy that could stand with Elliott, and he could hang on the ground with Elliott, although I do think Elliott is the better wrestler. So, one thing you do have to take into consideration is Elliott in his last fight against Ben Wen. Granted, that is a really, it was a big shock for everybody, but, Wen just immediately wrapped him up in a submission and choked him out. I mean, that was a shocker. Because, I mean, Tim Elliott had gone five rounds with Demetrius Johnson. And nobody had really been able to do anything like that against him. I mean, other than Joseph Benavidez, who had him in a really nasty choke. But, I was blown away. So it's possible that somebody with a really talented ground game like Manga could pull this off. It's just all about if Elliott presents opportunities for Manga. Cause I think, on the feet, Manga will probably be competitive. I mean, he honestly could win on in the stand-up portion of the fight. I mean, Elliott is a very awkward striker. He throws a lot of strikes unorthodox from unique angles, and he has a lot of confidence in his own ability to get back to his feet, so he leaves himself off balance. I mean, it's very difficult to prepare for. So the main reason that I'm going to end up siding with Elliott here is the fact that Manga's only taking this fight on a little over a week's notice. I think that he's a really good talent, and he's going to win fights in the UFC, and he could win this one. But I just think with such short notice, it's a very tough to make your UFC debut in a foreign country in Canada and take on somebody who is good enough to fight for the belt. So I think Elliott gets the win here, but again, I would not be shocked if Petro Manga ends up becoming a guy to watch in the flyweight division down the road. But my pick is Elliott. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Chad Laprise, who is 13-2, taking on Galor Bafondo, who is 5-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Laprise -150 to come back on Bafondo at +110. And right now, over at five dimes, is Laprise -160 to come back on Bafondo is at +140. So again, line margins have tightened up. A little bit more action coming in on Laprise. And talk about a difficult line here as well. I mean, you're setting a line on somebody like Laprise, which is a solid established veteran in obviously the UFC welterweight division. And you're giving him a guy like Bafondo, which is – he's had seven fights in his pro career and nothing remotely close to the experience that Laprise has had thus far. And even in his UFC debut, I mean, Bafondo got a guy like Charlie Ward that he was able to defeat. So that's not saying that much because, again, Ward is not the highest caliber of opponent that you can get in there with. But that being said, Bafondo is a crazy good striker. I mean, the guy is more than impressive. on film and his background. I mean, the striking ability and the unorthodox technique that he uses and his just his kicking ability. I mean, it's phenomenal. And the thing is, he utilizes that karate, that kickboxing, that sport karate, everything, the combination of his striking technique actually works in the cage really well. He's able to adapt it like some of the other guys that come from a kickboxing sport karate type of background. I mean, like, for example, Wonder Boy, there's a lot of kickboxers that can't adapt and make their way into the UFC and have success. But I mean, a certain few have. And again, like I mentioned Wonder Boy because he was one that obviously excelled and got his way to the top. But Fondo's another one that has basically translated his striking ability into the cage thus far. And again, he hasn't had that high caliber experience yet, but a win over Laprise will get him that. So, I mean, Bufando is definitely a fun guy to watch. I mean, he's athletic, he's powerful, he's explosive. And the thing that he lacks is really that real time experience against solid competition. Again, that's what he's going to get here against Laprise. Laprise is a great striker in his own right, a veteran. I mean, he's faced good competition and he's got a well-rounded skill set for being more well-known as a striker. I mean, we know that Laprise can actually take the fight to the ground when he needs to in most cases as well. He has a little bit of a BJJ game. I mean, that's not what's going to highlight his game. You don't really have to worry about Laprise subbing anybody, honestly. So it's not like he's going to go after, even though here, that is what you want to exploit. So I wouldn't be surprised maybe now that I'm saying all that, if Laprise does get it to the ground, if he tries to take his back or whatever and explore a rear naked choke or something of that nature. So wouldn't be shocked if that happens because that's kind of a smart thing to do considering the situation here in this fight. But typically speaking, Laprise isn't going to look for a sub. He's going to look to stand and bang. If he can't have success on his feet, then he's going to look to grind you out on the ground and probably, you know, on his way to a decision win. So he's a savvy vet. He's got good experience. He's got knockout power in the feet in his own right. So this is a great matchup here. I mean, it's either going to be Laprise having to weather an early storm and just kind of doing what he does and getting the win either midway through or late on the scorecards, or it's Bufando just doing what he does and going out there and just destroying Laprise quick-like. So, you know, this reminds me somewhat of the fight that we were talking about earlier with Bambosi and DeChirico, but I think this is even a different situation for me. I like Bufando actually better. I think Laprise is going to have trouble weathering this storm, and I think Bufando is going to have another highlight real temper knockout, honestly. I think that's what happens. I think he's just going to be too fast, just too explosive, and I know Laprise, like I said, I'm not counting him out. I don't think he's an easy out at all, but I think Bufando is going to have a highlight reel knockout here, and he's going to really open up some eyes. So I do think he wins, as crazy as that sounds, against a guy like Laprise. I'm giving him respect as far as the betting window goes, and it's not really going crazy the other way, so I think a lot of people do respect Bufando as far as betting against him, at least, because it's not going nuts, like I said. So I do think there is some value as well. I think it's dog or pass situation here because you really do have two strikers going against each other here. And I think Bufando is just the better striker. Now, again, Laprise is above and beyond that. And he does have that edge, like I just mentioned, but I don't think he's going to be able to utilize it here. I think Bufando gets it done. So the pick is Bufando and it's going to be inside the distance for me.
This is a crazy fight to really break down. I mean, Bufando has such unique and potentially devastating striking ability. I mean, the guy can just throw kicks from just about anywhere. And if he connects with them, I mean, his opponent is going lights out. Chad Laprise is a very solid, well-rounded mixed martial artist. Doesn't really have any major weaknesses to his game. I mean, one of his few losses was just getting caught during a stand-up exchange against Trinaldo. And then since then, he's moved up to the welterweight division. I thought he looked rock solid in his welterweight debut. You know, he's a guy that, you know, I don't see him being a major player in the division, but he's a guy that I think could, be just a solid guy that can stick around for a long time in the UFC welterweight division. I thought he looked really good against Kamosi in his last fight. I thought he looked great against Thibaut Gaultier before that, picking up a quick first round knockout. So, Laprise has solid technical boxing. He can push a good pace. He has, okay wrestling. So I think he can mix things up a little bit. I mean, he's not even close. I mean, in terms of striking styles, I mean, these fighters couldn't be more different. I mean, Bufando wants space. He wants to just throw the craziest, goofiest stuff that you'll ever see. And he's good enough that he can land it. Laprise wants more to fight in the phone booth a little bit. Boxing range, and connect with punches. So if Laprise can get inside, he could make something happen. If Laprise can make Bufando work, he could make something happen. If he can drag this fight into the later rounds, I think it's good for Laprise. It's just all about not eating some devastating power shot in the first round. It's similar to Bengbo, say, his fight against Dechirico, but I think this is, both guys are way more technical. Bufando is a much more technical striker than Bengbose, and Laprise is a much more well-rounded, capable fighter than Dechirico. So, I think this fight will be extremely entertaining, but if Laprise wants to win, he probably has to make it less entertaining. I mean, he needs to, close the distance, muddy it up a little bit, maybe enter the clinch, take this fight to the ground. I mean, there's just way better opportunities for Laprise. I haven't seen how Bufando looks off of his back, really. You know, he's got two losses, but they were disqualification losses. It wasn't like somebody just figured him out. So we really, there's just a lot that we don't know about Bufando. And I think that this is the fight that you're going to learn what he's capable of, because clearly he was just being fed someone in his UFC debut and he made mincemeat out of him. So, Chad Laprise is a much stiffer test, and I don't know if Bufando can pass it, so I'm gonna side with Laprise, but, I mean, Bufando clearly has the capability of knocking him out at some point if he can connect. So, my pick is Laprise, but I'm definitely nervous about this one. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have UFC newcomer Julian Marquez, who is 6-1. Taking on Darren Stewart, who is 7-2 with 1-0 contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Marquez -270, the comeback on Stewart at +190. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's actually Marquez at -350, the comeback on Stewart at +290. Now, there is some 290s out there, -290 at Bookmaker right now, -284 at Pinnacle, looking over the Don Best screen. In Vegas, it's like -270s, 260s. So they haven't quite caught up to the 3-1 mark, but it will get there. So those of you guys that like Marquez, if you can get under 3-1 right now, it's probably time to throw him in a parlay or get him in there straight. Because if you'd like him, I think it's going to close around where five dimes is now, or maybe even higher. So under 3-1, get on it right now at 350 where it's at dimes. I think it's you got to kind of be careful and cautious with that price. Cause again, I am really pleased with what I've seen from Marquez overall. I mean, the guy is a beast in his own right as well. Now, again, this is a middleweight. He won his fight on the Dana White Contender Series show. I mean, by impressive fashion as well over Phil Haas, which is obviously a highly touted prospect in his own right as well. So, but before that, man, I mean, Marquez, if you study some film on him, I mean, even – his in the smaller organizations, he fought for LFA. He was impressive in LFA and Combate Americas. He was impressive there as well. He beat Matt Hamill in that fight. Even the fight that he lost against Chris Harris, in Bellator. I mean, that was a very close competitive fight, and Harris is actually a very underrated fighter, and he's gotten better since that fight. So you see the progress in Marquez's game, and you see where he's developed. And then, I mean, it came out, and it really, he got the showcase knockout on the Dana White Contender Series. And the guy, it's not a fluke. I mean, the guy is that good. I mean, I think he's powerful. He's great on the feet. He can take you down as well. He's got a good ground game going with it. Everything. I mean, the guy is just a very complete fighter and a tough out. He's got a great chin. He's got good conditioning. So he's a very nice addition to the middleweight division. And I think they're giving him a winnable fight here against Stewart. Now, again, you can't really count Stewart out because he's an explosive fighter in his own right. Of course, I mean, he's not the easiest guy to take down, but again, that's the way you beat Stewart as well, is getting him to the ground and kind of grinding him out on the feet. He is a little bit more inactive that you want to see as well. Stewart needs to get a little bit busier, needs to be a little bit more aggressive. But if he does land and connect, man, you could be some serious trouble. So Marquez definitely has to watch out for Stewart's power on the feet. And Stewart also goes for ground as well. I mean, he does have some wrestling judo background as well. He does go for the takedowns. I mean, he goes after it and tries to get you to the ground. And then from top, he can be dangerous and has some power as well. But overall, I think this is a difficult matchup for Stewart. I just think he's outclassed almost in every area across the board here. So I opened Marquez a solid favorite. Obviously, the bettors out there, and for the most part, agree in that you know, assessment, and they're coming in that way as well. So I think Marquez is the right side here, and I think he's going to probably end up finishing Stewart along the way. If he doesn't, I think he's going to win still 30-27, 29-28 type of decision across the board for Marquez as well. So I'd be surprised if he loses his UFC debut, his official one, I guess I should say. So Marquez is my pick.
I've been very impressed by Julian Marquez. I thought that he was a decent prospect, and then what he did against Phil Hawes in his fight on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series was incredibly impressive. I mean, that was a guy in Hawes that was being trained at Greg Jackson's gym. He had elite training partners, great coaching, and had a bit of hype behind him. And Marquez just took him down. He got top position. He outstruck him. He wore him down. And then eventually, as they were both getting back to their feet from the floor, he landed a brutal head kick and just knocked him completely out. I mean, it was a fantastic performance. I mean, I think Marquez, you know, he's well-rounded. He's the real deal. This is a guy with power in his hands. He can mix things up both with his hands and his feet. He can get TKOs with top position on the ground, and he does have a little bit of a submission game. I wouldn't say it's an elite ground game, but it's good enough. And he's finished every one of his fights so far, which is pretty impressive. Now Darren Stewart, I would definitely say he's been a disappointment so far. I mean, he debuted at light heavyweight. He hasn't looked the best, had some pretty poor performances, in my opinion, overall at light heavyweight. Ended up losing that rematch to Barroso, which prompted him to decide to drop down to the middleweight division, and then immediately loses to UFC newcomer Carl Roberson, a guy with basically a striking background. And Roberson got a takedown and tapped him out in the first round, which I thought was shocking. So, I mean, if Roberson can do it, I think Marquez definitely can do it. I mean, I think Marquez is more experienced on the ground. Marquez can get takedowns. You know, Stewart is a good athlete. He has some power, but he's just a fatally flawed fighter. He can get taken down. He can be outworked. I think conditioning is a bit of an issue with him as well. So I just think Julian Marquez, as Nick mentioned, is better than him everywhere. He has an awesome nickname, the Cuban Missile Crisis. So I'll definitely be rooting for him here against Stewart. I think Marquez can get the job done, and I'm going to pick him to win. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card in the light heavyweight division, we have Jared Cannonier, who is 10-2, taking on Jan Błachowicz, who is 20-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Cannonier, -215. The comeback on Błachowicz at +165. Right now, over five dimes. Cannonier, -185, +160 on Błachowicz. So the line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming into this fight. Early on, it was a little bit more towards Cannonier, and now we're seeing a little bit more action towards Błachowicz as well. So another interesting fight. I mean, from top to bottom, this card, as I say, is a pretty stacked card, honestly. We complain a lot about some of the weaker cards that the UFC's throwing together as of late, but they're starting to put some good cards together. And I mean, we've seen them, you know, periodically from time to time. And this is one of the better ones of the year from top to bottom, as I said, with all the competitive matchups that we're talking about, intriguing fights and challenging to cap as well. And this is another one. I think Cannonier, in my opinion, has the edge here in a lot of ways. I mean, Błachowicz obviously is a tough out. He gets a little bit, too much disrespect at times. I mean, he's a very solid out. I know he's, and against top tier competition, Błachowicz has not been able to overcome it against basically guys that could put him on his back and out wrestle him. I mean, Corey Anderson, Gustafson, Cummins. I mean, you know, guys like that have been able to control him a little bit, get the takedowns and beat him. I mean, on the feet, Błachowicz is all right. He's got some, I shouldn't just say all right. I mean, he's got some finishing ability. He's obviously a heavy hitter, and he, when he wants to be aggressive, he can be very effective with the striking at times as well. So he's no slouch on the ground as well. He's got some underrated wrestling, but again, that is his problem as well. I mean, against better wrestlers, he gets put on his back and controlled a little bit. So, he's a very solid, talented fighter and a very tough out at a light heavyweight for sure. But Cannonier has been more than impressive in my opinion. I think the guy continues to get better and better. He gets more confidence as well as he goes. I mean, even that loss to, I mean, Glover Teixeira, you can respect it. I mean, Glover's at the, again, top of the food chain when it comes to light heavyweights for a long time. I know he's, a lot of people are going to think we're going to get into his fight next, obviously, but a lot of people believe he's declined, and I understand that, but still, I mean, surviving and not getting finished on the ground for the time spent for Cannonier on the ground against Glover just says a lot, in my opinion. So his submission defense is very solid. And then his striking, obviously his offense is on par. I mean, it's on point, man. He's got really good power. He's got some speed. He's got some accuracy. He's got that killer instinct as well. So Cannonier is a handful. And on top of it, offensively, he doesn't have bad wrestling. I mean, he's able to get some takedowns. And Blackwich, like I said, at times he does get taken down and put on his back as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see both of these guys getting top position at one point or another throughout that fight. But I think more so than not, these guys, their takedown defense is probably going to be effective enough to keep the fight upright. And it probably turns into a striking battle. If that's the case, then I do favor Cannonier in this spot. I think Cannonier, again, his hands are going to be the difference here. I think he's going to be able to land a little bit more consistently and do a little bit more damage along the way. So I do think Cannonier wins. Probably Blackwood's a very tough guy to finish, probably on the scorecards. But again, with the explosiveness that he possesses with the power in his hands, I wouldn't be surprised who Cannonier knocks out in the light heavyweight division though either. So my pick is Cannonier to win and get a very, very impressive win over a solid vet, respected vet in Blackwood here.
I'm a big fan of Cannonier. I mean, he's an exciting fighter. He has power. He's got a great gas tank and he can just go in fights. I mean, his performance against Ian Kutalaba is one of my favorites, recently. So I really do think this guy has a lot of potential, but I mean, he is clearly still raw. He got thrown into the fire against Glover Teixeira and Teixeira just took him down for three straight rounds and beat him up and won an easy decision. Now I'm not saying that Jan Blachowicz can easily do that because his wrestling isn't and ground game isn't nearly the level of Teixeira's, but Cannonier does not really have great ability to get back to his feet. I mean, he gets put down relatively easily. He's only got 30% takedown defense so far in his UFC career. I mean, at times he's just almost flops to his back way too easily. So I think that there is potential here for Blachowicz to use his wrestling, even though it's almost silly to think that he would use his wrestling because takedown defense has been an issue for him. As Nick mentioned, you know, Cummins, Gustafson, and Corey Anderson all took him down and beat him up on the ground. But that's not Cannonier's game. Cannonier's a guy that's a banger. He wants to stand. He wants to throw big bombs. Blachowicz can, I think Blachowicz can hold his own in that department. But I mean, if Blachowicz really wants to win this fight, he needs to, drag Cannonier to the ground. That's where Cannonier can be exposed a little bit. There are definitely still parts of Cannonier's game that need refinement, and the ground game is definitely one of them. I think on the feet, Cannonier is very dangerous. He hits hard. He can push a high tempo. He has a very good striking rate, and he can keep it up for three straight rounds. Blachowicz, I think, can hang with him there, but I think he would eventually lose if this fight stays in the stand-up for three straight rounds. That's why I think Blachowicz should mix it up and go for takedowns. Now, Cannonier can get takedowns too, but again, like I said, I think his ground game is just too raw. I could see him being swept. I could see Blachowicz just quickly getting back to his feet. You know, why waste your energy? So I think this fight's going to be close. I think it'll be competitive. Cannonier hits hard, but Blachowicz has a great chin. He should be able to eat the shots that Cannonier throws. And Blachowicz does mix things up well. I think his body kicks can be effective. And he did pull off a submission in his last UFC fight. So it's possible that if Blachowicz can get this fight to the ground or find an opening, he might be able to make something happen. He's not known for his finishing ability, but I mean, he is capable. So I'm actually kind of leaning Blachowicz because I just think he's a little bit more well-rounded and refined as a fighter. I think Cannonier does have a higher ceiling, but I don't think he's there yet. So my pick is going to be Jan Blachowicz. Now moving on to the main card on Big Network Fox, we have Glover Teixeira in the light heavyweight division, who is 26-6, taking on Misha Cirkunov, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Teixeira -155 to come back on Surkunov at +115. Right now, Surkunov -165. Teixeira is at +145. So line flipped completely. And I'm a little bit surprised. I guess not too much because I know the popularity of Surkunov is crazy. I mean, even from his UFC debut, a lot of people got behind him and known that he was a guy that a lot of people have been talking about and wanted to see him in the UFC. So he got in there and then he started just destroying everybody. So what else can you say? Surkunov, I mean, made a splash right away and followed it up with impressive, you know, wins. But then unfortunately for him, suffered his first defeat recently, and it was the hands of Volkan Ozdemir, who is actually fighting for the title next against Daniel Cormier. So he's getting a title shot, not based off that alone, but that was, you know, one of the stepping stones along the way, obviously, for Ozdemir to get that title shot. So Surkunov got destroyed by Ozdemir, and a lot of people might think it's a fluke or whatnot. I mean, Ozdemir is a dangerous guy, so you got to give him a lot of credit for that. But that being said, I mean, I don't know. It might have exposed Surkunov a little bit as well. I mean, fighters get caught. Look, that was his first knockout loss in his career, obviously. So I don't think Surkunov is – his chin is garbage or anything like that, of course. And again, I think Ozdemir has a ton of power. So I understand it. But he is coming off of his first, you know, devastating loss of his career. And then he's facing a guy like Teixeira, which is a – I don't even want to say what kind of veteran he is. I mean, the guy is championship caliber. I mean, he made it to a title shot, obviously, for a reason. I mean, the guy's in the BJJ world, in the jiu-jitsu world, I mean, throughout the years, he's been known as just, I mean, an outstanding competitor, one of the best. I mean, he's so elite on the ground. It's unbelievable. That's where his game really is highlighted the most. I mean, Teixeira on the ground is, again, on another level, even though Surkunov is known for his jiu-jitsu game as well. I mean, that's the funny thing here. I mean, you basically have a jiu-jitsu stylist going against a jiu-jitsu stylist here, but obviously they've evolved and they've molded their game to work really well. And they've developed stand-up games for the UFC as well, for the Octagon. And, you know, obviously as part of the sport, they've just rounded out their game. So they're more than just jiu-jitsu practitioners at this point, but that's what they're known for. But I think there's a difference between Surkunov's jiu-jitsu and Teixeira. Honestly, in my opinion, I put Teixeira a level above it. So I'd be shocked if Surkunov is able to submit Teixeira, but I wouldn't be that surprised if Teixeira was able to submit Surkunov. On the other hand, so Teixeira definitely has an edge on the ground. On the feet, I think actually Teixeira has an edge on the feet as well. I do lean his way. Now, Surkunov can be dangerous. I understand Teixeira, again, what I just mentioned last fight, a lot of people believe that he's declined. I mean, he's a shell of himself. He's probably on the way out the door or whatnot. I mean, it could be. We'll see because, I mean, unfortunately for Teixeira, you know, he's coming off of a devastating knockout loss as well. I mean, Gustafsson was able to get him deep in that fight too. I mean, that's the thing with Glover. He has been in these wars, recently and, you know, especially in the Octagon, since he made it over the UFC, those fights, some of the fights that he has had against John Jones, has been grueling against Gustafsson. That was a grueling fight as well. Of course, getting knocked out by Anthony Johnson. So I get it. The guy's 38 years old. He's getting knocked out. He's been in grueling wars. He's just not going to be the same fighter. I understand that, but I still think he has an edge over Surkunov. I just think he's the better fighter still. And I think if he doesn't get caught and knocked out and his chin survives, I don't see how Surkunov beats him. I don't think he beats him on the scorecards. And again, I don't see Surkunov stopping him outside of maybe landing something on that chin of Teixeira. So if Glover does not get knocked out, he's going to win this fight, in my opinion. So I'm going to pick Glover to win it. I just think he's a better version of Surkunov, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. I just think the only true advantage that Surkunov here in this spot has is his age. I mean, and probably his durability overall. But again, we'll see how that goes this weekend. So my pick is Teixeira. I think all of you guys that came in on Surkunov are wrong, honestly. And I think Teixeira is going to make you all pay for it. So go Teixeira.
And I'm actually going to side with Nick's cheerleading here. Glover Teixeira is an extremely talented fighter. And when he faces people that can't just blow him out on the feet and avoid the ground, he does a really good job. I mean, you look – guys that he can expose the ground game, he gets them on their back and he either submits them, TKOs them, or wins a decision, like he did against OSP, like he did against Cannoneer. Guys that he can knock out on the feet still, he goes and does that. I mean, you look what he did against Rashad Evans. So, he's slowing down. He's older. His chin isn't the best, but, he's still a very dangerous fighter and somebody that, you definitely have to respect in the division. Glover still has a lot of power. And Misha Surkunov, man, that was such a letdown of a performance. His last bout against Ozdemir, I mean, he was wild. He was out of control and just charged forward and just ate a shot that didn't even look like it was thrown that hard. And I mean, it just knocked him out. It was amazing, actually. But it kind of reminded me of Fabricio Werdum when he took on Stipe Miocic. I mean, there just wasn't a lot of respect for Stipe's power, and Werdum just started charging forward, winging shots at him, leaving his chin exposed, and Stipe just caught him clean on the chin and knocked him out. That was kind of Misha's moment there, where, you know, maybe he had a little bit too much confidence in his chin and just didn't respect Ozdemir and ended up paying for it. So Surkunov is a guy that's well-rounded. He's younger than Teixeira. He's, I would say, a slightly better athlete than Teixeira. Surkunov, I don't think he has the same level of power, but he also does have a very good ground game. I mean, the ground game is his strength, honestly. I mean, he gets guys to the floor. He taps them out. But is he as good on the ground as Teixeira? I don't think so. I think Glover has as good, if not better, wrestling. I think Glover has a better submission game. And I think Glover can get top position if these guys are getting into scrambles on the canvas. The only thing I'm really concerned about is chin strength. Yeah, Surkunov got knocked out of nowhere by a shot that didn't look like it was thrown that hard. But, I mean, that was thrown by Volkan Ozdemir, and that guy is fighting for the title next. So, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world to have a loss, a stoppage loss to a top contender. So Glover, on the other hand, he has been brutally knocked out. Anthony Johnson brutally knocked him out. Alexander Gustafsson just beat the tar out of him and eventually, finally knocked him out. And then Ryan Bader even had him in big trouble before Glover turned the tides on him. So Glover's chin, I would say, is definitely in a worse position than Surkunov's in terms of the damage he's taken in fights. But I still think that Glover has some to offer. The only thing that really concerns me is the fact that when Glover fought Gustafsson, he took so much damage. And that was this past May. That was his last fight. I mean, he ate some big shots, and then eventually it was a fifth round TKO. So if Glover can bounce back from that, I think that he can defeat Misha Surkunov. I think he can beat him on the feet. I think that he can beat him on the ground. If Glover's a step slow, if the damage he took in that fight is going to cost him a little bit more of his own talent and ability, then Surkunov could win this. I mean, Surkunov could knock him out. Surkunov does have some pop in his hands. I don't think he's a really technical striker, but he's quick, and he could lunge in and connect with something and knock Glover's block off. It's very possible. But I'm going to side with the Brazilian here. I think the veteran still has some tricks up his sleeve, and I think Glover does have the ability to beat Misha Surkunov here, whether it's by knockout, decision, or maybe even a submission, because Surkunov has had some issues early in his career against some grapplers, and he got tapped out. So maybe Glover could bring some bad memories back for Surkunov. So my pick is going to be Glover as well. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Santiago Ponzinibbio, who is 25-3, taking on Mike Perry, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Ponzinibbio -175, the comeback on Perry at +135. Right now, over five dimes, it is Ponzinibbio -190, the comeback on Perry at +165. So line margins have tightened up. And again, there is two-way action coming in this fight, because early on it was Perry. Now, as we get closer to fight time, we're seeing some back on Ponzinibbio. So there's decent action on both guys here. Not that surprised. I mean, I did figure that more people would probably go towards Perry. He seems to be the popular hyped fighter. I mean, with his attitude, with the just everything about him, his demeanor and his knockout ability. I mean, let's make no mistake about it. Since Perry has stepped into the octagon, I mean, he's been nothing but impressive. I mean, you know, he destroyed Lim. He beat Roberts, you know, late in that fight as well. And again, the knockouts of Ellenberger and Reyes as of late too. So 4 out of 5 guys he's knocked out. And then the one loss that he has was against a very respected striker in Japan. So, you know, Perry's done well for himself, and I think he's only getting more confidence and he's only going to get better. I mean, that's a scary thing for Perry. I think that his game is still raw and he's only going to develop. I mean, overall, he's got a decent wrestling background as well. He's got decent takedown defense, but it's his striking and it's his punching power that definitely is his best attribute. Here against Ponzinibbio, though, I don't know if that's going to be enough. Ponzinibbio, in my opinion, is by far the better overall fighter. Ponzinibbio is the better striker here as well. So, I mean, Perry has that big punch he can land, and Ponzinibbio does have a somewhat of a suspect chin. We got to admit that. I mean, Ponzinibbio has been, you know, caught knocked out. Unfortunately for him, I mean, Larkin was able to, you know, to catch him recently and put him out. And then, of course, earlier in his career as well, he got beat, you know, back, I think it was in, you know, or 2011 or something as well. So Ponzinibbio is the type of guy typically that if you catch him and you rock him, he can survive it. And then he comes back and he's okay. But I mean, against Perry, you don't want to be in that situation. Perry does have that killer instinct. If he rocks you, he's probably going to get rid of you. So, Ponzinibbio just needs to fight smart, but he is the better fighter. Like I said, I think he can utilize angles and his diverse striking ability. I mean, he's going to throw a lot more from his tool set than Perry will in this fight overall. So I think he's smarter. I think he's better, and I think he's probably going to come away with a win. So the late action as we get closer to fight time, I think is correct. But again, as you get closer to 2-1 or over 2-1, it's a hard fight to bet. I mean, with the punching power that Perry does have, I mean, I don't even though I'm picking Ponzinibbio and I'm telling you guys, he is the better fighter. I don't recommend really laying a bunch of chalk against a guy like Perry though either. Cause like I said, I think he's the type of welterweight that honestly, no matter who you put in front of him, he could have a good day and knock him out. I mean, it's that simple. He's got that kind of punching power. So be careful if you're laying the chalk on Ponzinibbio, but he is a better fighter and it's hard not to pick him here. If we do see a drastic drop in price, I mean, if Ponzinibbio dips down to like 150, 160, even 170 around that opener, because like I said, right now it's 190, then there is some value in Ponzinibbio. So it's that line game. You got to basically time it right. And if it's at a good price underneath 2-1, grab it. If it's over 2-1, I think you stay away from it kind of thing here. So the pick is Ponzinibbio, and I think he does come away with the win, and probably by stoppage is my pick.
This fight should be extremely entertaining. I mean, both Santiago Ponzinibbio and Mike Perry have a high finish rate. They both push a high pace. They both have solid accuracy. I think this fight could go either way. I mean, Mike Perry has the power to change fights. And if he can connect with Ponzinibbio's chin, he could definitely put him out. But it goes the same way. Ponzinibbio has good power as well. And when he smells blood in the water, I mean, this guy is an absolute force in terms of swarming opponents. I mean, what he did to Gunnar Nelson was shocking. I mean, I thought that Nelson could get that fight to the floor and maybe make something happen, and Ponzinibbio just shut him down and just took him out. I mean, and Gunnar Nelson's a talented fighter. Ponzinibbio is a guy that has been able to rack up a pretty impressive winning streak now, 5 in a row in the welterweight division. And while Nelson was the first ranked opponent, I think that he's looked incredibly good in all of his fights. You know, he took on guys like, you know, Nordine Taleb, who's further down the card, but I mean, Ponzinibbio just outworked him over the course of 3 rounds to unanimous decision. He had excellent takedown defense against Zach Cummings. I mean, he showcased a lot of different aspects of his game. And the Nelson was kind of just the cherry on top to kind of announce him to the top 15 in the UFC welterweight division. And I think he's going to stay there because Mike Perry, while he's dangerous and brash and has that, you know, me against the world personality that some people hate, a lot of people hate and some people love, you know, people like to watch Mike Perry just to see what happens in his fights. And I think Perry just isn't as technical as Ponzinibbio. He got exposed in that fight against Alan Joban, a fight that Joban just utilized distance and range well and kept Perry at bay, avoided Perry's swarming attacks. If Ponzinibbio is able to do that, I think he's going to be in great shape against Perry. Ponzinibbio is a ferocious striker, but he can be patient if he needs to be. So, this could be a really good important test for him, because if Ponzinibbio is overly aggressive, Perry's going to make him pay. But if Ponzinibbio can force Perry to come to him and then just start picking him apart, I think he's going to be in really good shape. While Ponzinibbio does have not the greatest chin, I mean, he did get knocked out by Lorenz Larkin, I think Perry definitely has some chin issues as well. You know, Joban had him in a world of hurt multiple times, and Perry has been hurt when he was outside the UFC as well. So I think this could be a showcase fight for Ponzinibbio. I think that he does win in convincing fashion, probably by a first or second round knockout. But Ponzinibbio cannot take Perry lightly, because Perry has devastating power, and if he can connect with something heavy, Ponzinibbio could be going for a ride. So, but my pick is going to be Ponzinibbio. Now, this takes us to the co-main event of the evening. We have Ricardo Lamas, who is 18-5, taking on Josh Emmett, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Lamas -190, the comeback on Emmett at +150. That 190 didn't last too long. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Lamas -275. The comeback on Emmett is at +235. So wasn't sure how you guys would react out there with this betting line, because honestly, I mean, I think Emmett is a fighter that you got to respect, especially since he dropped down 145 pounds with that frame, with that power, with that ability. I don't think he's an easy out for anybody at 145 pounds, to be honest with you, even though Lamas has looked outstanding, and that's probably not even giving him enough credit for, by saying that. I mean, the guy is a stud, and he's been for a long time. I mean, dating back to the WEC days, the guy, you could tell he's had a tremendous amount of skill and ability, and he's just, I mean, wow, that's all I can say about Lamas. I mean, even in his losses, I mean, he didn't get finished by Holloway. See, this is the thing with Lamas for me. He is a bit chinny at times. I mean, he's been knocked out three times in his career thus far, and you know what? It's unfortunate, but in the back of my head, I can't help but think that chin, I mean, that's a glaring issue that he has. But then he goes against a guy like Holloway, doesn't get knocked out. He goes against a guy like Jose Aldo. And Jose Aldo was a lot more in his prime back then than obviously these days here, because it was a few years back now as well. And he doesn't get knocked out. So hard to say that he does have a suspect chin. I mean, you go against the champions right now. I mean, Jose Aldo was a former champ, one of the most devastating finishers in the featherweight division, in the history of the featherweight division, and he didn't get knocked out by him. And Holloway's the current champ that just went out there and destroyed, you know, Aldo, and he didn't get finished by him. So hard to gauge Lamas at times, but what is not hard to gauge with Lamas at times is his ability and his skill. I mean, the guy has awesome striking. He's got good wrestling to the point where he takes you down. His ground and pound is nasty. I mean, he's got brutal finishing ability. So I respect Lamas. I think he is a tremendous fighter. I think with a solid win here, he could get himself thrown right back in the featherweight title mix. And you know what? You cannot ever underestimate Lamas either, because he is what you do call a complete fighter with a ton of experience over quality competition, and he's been finishing fights. So much respect for Lamas. But I can't help to think that this is a tough fight, like I said from the beginning here. I think Emmett matches up actually pretty well with Lamas. I mean, size-wise, Lamas is going to have a little bit of height and reach on him, but not much. So they're going to be similar in that, you know, in that sort of perspective there. And then as far as power on the feet, I think it's going to be close. Emmett brings a lot of power to 145 pounds. I mean, with that frame, with the ability, I mean, he's got some punching power for sure. So Lamas definitely has to respect that punching game. And then, of course, the wrestling should neutralize each other out a little bit. I think both these guys have enough game that they can put each other on their, you know, on their backs and kind of grind out the fight a little bit there as well. So I do give a slight technical edge in all areas to Lamas. I think he is a little bit better than Emmett, but at the current price right now, -275 +235, I think you guys are all insane, honestly. I mean, in my opinion, I think that it's going to be a lot more competitive than that. And I think Emmett probably does enough to steal this fight and pulls out the decision, upset win here, or even finishes, Lamas along the way. So I'm going to go on a limb and pick the underdog. And I'm going to tell you guys all that Emmett's going to pull off a very impressive win, the biggest win of his career by far. And again, not trying to disrespect Lamas. I think that accomplished a tremendous amount in the UFC thus far, and he's got a lot of wins ahead of him as well. I just think in this fight, I mean, it's too close to call for me. I mean, obviously a lot of you guys out there disagree. I haven't really even, you know, seen or heard or read anybody else picking Emmett, to be honest with you. So now I'll probably be on a little sailboat by myself here, but I do think it's close, and I think that Emmett has some value at the price, and I think Emmett's going to get the job done. So that's my pick. I'm going to stick with it.
And I definitely have to disagree here. I mean, Ricardo Lamas is the number three fighter in the featherweight division for a reason. I mean, he's gone in there against some of the best in the world, and he's beat most of them. I mean, wins over Cub Swanson. I mean, he absolutely demolished Jason Knight in his last fight. So he earned an opportunity to fight Jose Aldo in the co-main event of this card, but Aldo ended up getting pulled to fight Holloway in a rematch because Frankie Edgar got hurt. So now in steps Josh Emmett. But I mean, you have to give a lot of respect to Lamas. I mean, the performances he's been putting on in the cage have been just amazing. I mean, the victory over Dennis Bermudez, when Bermudez was on a huge win streak, Lamas just smacked him with the jab, dropped him, immediately tapped him out. I mean, he tore apart Diego Sanchez's legs when Diego was fighting at featherweight, which was probably an ill-advised decision. And then Charles Oliveira, he ends up tapping out Charles Oliveira, of all people. So that just shows what he's capable of. I mean, the guy can knock people out. He can submit them. He can win decisions. He's a very well-rounded, dangerous guy. And the only people he has lost to in the last 6 years have been Chad Mendez, Max Holloway, and Jose Aldo. I mean, basically the top three guys, three of the top guys in the featherweight division of the last 6 or 7 years. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Ricardo Lamas clearly is one of the elites in the division. Josh Emmett, not so fast. I think that Emmett is a dependable guy. He pushes a decent pace. He is well-rounded. I think on the feet, he's capable. He has pretty good takedowns as well, as evidenced by his win over Holtzman. His problem is, I just haven't seen that tenacity out of him yet. Like Nick mentioned that, you know, maybe Lamas has chin issues and Emmett could expose him, but Emmett's gone to decision in all four of his UFC fights so far, split decision in two of them, including his loss to Des Green, which prompted him to drop to the featherweight division. Now, I will give Emmett credit. I thought that he looked rock solid in that featherweight debut most recently this past October against Felipe Arantes, but that's Felipe Arantes. Yeah, he's going to look great. Arantes is a decent featherweight, but he's not Ricardo Lamas. Lamas is a technical striker. Lamas has solid overall wrestling, good submission game and grappling game, and a ton of power. So I just think that Emmett's biting off more than he can chew here, stepping in on short notice to take on Lamas. The only way I see Lamas losing is getting clipped by a shot, although I don't think Emmett's powerful enough to really take Lamas out. Or maybe Lamas just takes him lightly because Emmett's stepping in on short notice. I mean, going from fighting Jose Aldo to fighting Josh Emmett, it's got to be difficult to stay as hyped up as you were to be trying to avenge a title loss. So I can understand if Lamas maybe has a letdown performance, but I just think that he's better than Josh Emmett everywhere here. Lamas's leg kicks are going to be a huge weapon here. I think that he can really punish Emmett's legs from the outside. Lamas does throw decent kicks. I used to make fun of his kicks, saying that he just wastes energy throwing them because they're, you know, wild attacks that don't really have that great technique. But he's clearly been working on them, and his kicks are a lot more dangerous these days. Lamas has good pinpoint striking that if Emmett leaves himself exposed on the feet at any moment, I think Lamas can crack him and hurt him. Emmett is durable, so I think what more often than not happens in this fight is Lamas just gets the better of Emmett in most areas of the fight and wins a decision, because I see Emmett being too tough to finish, but I think that he'll be gritty and this fight will be entertaining, and there might be some moments where both guys just bite down on the mouthpiece and go for it, kind of like what Lamas did at the end of his fight against Holloway. So this fight should be entertaining, but I think Ricardo Lamas is clearly the better fighter, and he will get the job done. So my pick is going to be Lamas. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening. In the welterweight division, we have a pair of former champions duking it out as former welterweight champion Robbie Lawler, who is 28-11 with one no contest, takes on former lightweight champion who has moved up a division, Rafael Dos Anjos, who is 27-9. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Lawler minus 160 to come back on Dos Anjos at plus 120. Right now, over five dimes, it's Dos Anjos minus 115. Lawler's a minus 105, so line flipped. Now, it has been out for a long time, and there's been a ton of action coming in on this fight either way. But as of late, as we get closer to fight time, there's more coming in on Dos Anjos. So I'm not really that surprised. I mean, Dos Anjos, in my opinion, has definitely looked like the better fighter as of late. Obviously, Lawler was the welterweight king there for a while, and then Woodley kind of put an end to that in devastating fashion fairly quickly. But again, Dos Anjos was a lightweight king for a while, and then obviously Eddie Alvarez put an end to that as well. So Dos Anjos moves up to welterweight, and as he does that, I mean, he looks pretty good. He's faced two solid guys right away off the rip. Safadine, which he's never going to get enough credit for winning that fight against. I mean, he looked good. He deserved that nod. And then Magny in his last fight. I mean, Magny was on his way, you know, putting himself into a title mix at one point as well. Now Dos Anjos running through him as well. Two very, very impressive wins over solid welterweights that are actually, I mean, obviously have a size advantage over a guy like RDA as well. So that's my concern a little bit with his height and fighting at 170 pounds. I thought he was going to be a little bit undersized, but obviously the weight cut was a drastic one for RDA. And I mean, so far he's been able to handle the big boys fairly decent. So I don't think it is going to be a big issue from what we've seen thus far, obviously. So Dos Anjos is a talented fighter, obviously a very complete skill set in his own right. I mean, the guy, again, more well known for his jiu-jitsu game and his ground game, but he hasn't really shown it in the octagon, because in the UFC, he's been obviously striking with people more than anything else. And I mean, obviously he's got a wrestling game. He goes in after takedowns as well, and he's able to finish by sub, but it's a striking that I think stands out the most in most people's minds. I mean, his ability to mix this up. And then again, if he needs to get a takedown, he can do it. In most cases, his wrestling is really good. So there's a lot to like about Dos Anjos' game, and he's a finisher as well, but he's facing Lawler. And in my opinion, I mean, the guy's been around forever, and what he's done recently in the last few years here, you have to take your hat off to the guy. I mean, I would have never thought back in the day that Robbie Lawler would get to a point where he'd win the welterweight strap in the UFC this far, and you know what I mean, this far along the line. So it's hard work, it's the will to win, and it's wanting it. I mean, it's the desire to become champion. That's what Lawler did. And obviously he put himself, surround himself with great training partners. American Top Team was a great influence on him. I mean, a lot of factors came into to make him champion, but I mean, he carried that role really well. And again, talk about devastating knockout power. Lawler has it. I mean, the guy's a warrior. He hits like a truck. I mean, he's going to continue to be always one of the hardest hitting welterweights there is out there. But unfortunately for him, it does seem like he could be on a little bit of decline. I'm not just saying that because he only got knocked out by Woodley. I mean, he's been in some wars lately. That Condit fight was really close. A lot of people felt that it could have went Condit's way. I understand that as well. Even in the last fight against Cerrone, that was a close fight as well. Another war. I mean, the McDonald wars that he's had, he's been around for so long, and just the fight years that he has. I mean, he's above and beyond his age of 35 for sure. So that's where the decline factor, that's where the non-confidence comes in with Lawler. That's the only thing that kind of makes you scratch your head and say, hey, does this guy really still have it? You know, and that's all being said with, again, one loss out of his last few fights against Woodley. So maybe we're discounting him a little bit too much. I mean, because he's proven time and time again that the guy puts the work in, and you cannot count the guy out. So in my opinion, a lot of people are counting him out. That's why I'm saying that against RDA here. I'm going to side with Lawler. I think that it will be a tremendous fight. I think both these guys have the ability to win this fight as well. I just think we're writing Lawler off a little bit too much. I think he is going to be the physically bigger, stronger fighter here. And I think if they get in a firefight, you know, I think right now I do trust Dos Anjos' chin a little bit more, but not enough to sway me in his direction yet. I think Lawler can deliver the goods as well. And I think that, with his size and his power and the ability that he has, and everybody counting out, you know, the former champ here in Lawler, I think he's going to open up some eyes here as well. So I'll go against the grain, and I will pick Lawler to defeat RDA in what should be hopefully a very interesting scrap. I think it's going to be a great fight, and I'm looking forward to it. But my pick is going to be Lawler to win.
For however long this fight lasts, I think it's going to be extremely entertaining. I mean, Robbie Lawler has been in some of the most exciting fights I've ever seen in the history of watching UFC fights. And Rafael Dos Anjos has really become a force in the latter half of his UFC run, becoming a very well-rounded mixed martial artist instead of just a submission specialist. Lawler, the one thing that I'm concerned about is the impact of all those crazy fights that he's had. His chin is not nearly what it used to be. I mean, the fact that Woodley was able to take him out so quickly is a little scary, but I will give him credit. He went and rested and didn't just go back and return right away after losing his belt like Michael Bisping did and get blown out again. He came back about a year later and took on Donald Cerrone and won a decision. It was a entertaining scrap. So, you know, he's playing it smart. He's not, you know, going crazy trying to take a ton of damage. I mean, but he has taken a ton of damage, especially when he was champion fighting those 5-round main events. You know, there were moments where he would just get beat on and then turn it on in the 5th round and then just win back the fight. That happened against McDonald. That happened against Condit. You know, it's something that he kind of taps into. It happened, I think, the 5th round against, Hendricks, the second in the rematch. So Robbie Lawler is a warrior. He's somebody that I will never doubt ever, again, but I do think that Rafael Dos Anjos might have the recipe for beating him. Lawler relies on kind of turning it up at the right moments and having very good takedown defense. He does not stay on his back for long. I saw a crazy stat that he's never attempted a submission his entire career. He's fought 40 fights. And he's never even attempted a submission. I just think that's hilarious. And he's never fought outside the United States until this card. Granted, it's Canada, so it's not that far out of the United States. But still, this is his first time fighting outside of the United States as well. So, you know, Lawler, as much as he's been around and been there and done that, he has added more to his game. I mean, the real focus on the takedown defense, the sprawling and brawling, the ability to put that pressure on his opponents. It's become much more disciplined as he went on that title run. And Dos Anjos could have his hands full here because on the feet, Lawler is going to be the bigger guy, the stronger guy. He's going to have 4 inches in reach, 3 inches in height. Dos Anjos might have to get takedowns to win this fight. And Lawler has, you know, rock solid takedown defense. So, and if he does get taken down, he usually pops back up. The last guy that I can even remember beating him with takedowns was Tim Kennedy back in Strikeforce, back when Robbie was in his kind of, you know, who cares phase. So, Lawler clearly cares at this point in his career. And I think Dos Anjos will have his hands full trying to take him down, but Dos Anjos might be able to get him on the feet. I really have a lot of respect for the improvements he's made in his stand-up ability. I mean, he can crack with his left hand. Being a southpaw could be an issue against Lawler. And Lawler's chin is something you definitely have to think about. Lawler looked great against Donald Cerrone, but, you know, Rafael Dos Anjos smoked Donald Cerrone twice. You won a dominant decision against him, and then he took him out quickly in the title rematch. So, you know, maybe Dos Anjos is going to present a bigger threat here. And, personally, I think Dos Anjos can put a lot of pressure on Lawler and maybe force him to fight defensive. And that's not something he usually likes to do. So, I think, Rafael Dos Anjos, with the way that he can mix things up with his, punching, with, the kicking game, which can be devastating at times. Lawler doesn't throw a lot of kicks. He doesn't really defend kicks. If you watched, you know, he's fighting against Marvin Manhoff. I mean, he likes to throw hands. So if Dos Anjos can mix things up, maybe he can get Lawler thinking about the striking and could sneak in some takedowns. I mean, Dos Anjos has an elite ground game, and he's showcased that in his last bout where, I mean, he just completely dominated Neil Magny. Now, I don't see him doing that to Lawler, but I can see him getting top position and maybe winning a round or two. In terms of conditioning, Dos Anjos, if he fights at the same, level that he fought when he won the title from Anthony Pettis, I mean, this guy could go five rounds hard. Or he could fight like he fought against Tony Ferguson and just fade, start strong and then slow down and then just get taken over against. So there's two different versions of Dos Anjos that I'm a little concerned about here. But if the champion level Dos Anjos shows up, and I think that we could see that with him not having to make such a drastic weight cut to 155, cutting to 170 instead. I think Dos Anjos might be able to keep that high tempo, and I think that he could win a decision against Lawler. He might even be able to knock him out. So my pick is going to be Dos Anjos. I'm not insanely confident about it because I have so much respect for Robbie Lawler, but I'm going to side with the Brazilian here. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 26. Now, our premium bets will be released Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have any free plays to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.